This is Opinions Audio. We're here to talk about European politics and public opinion. My name is Isabel Hoffman, and I'm with Catherine De Vries. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Isabel.
So, Catherine, our new opinion study is called The Optimism Gap. Why is that, and what did we find?
So what we decided to do with EU opinions this time around is to delve deeper into people's anxieties. Specifically, we want to focus on societal pessimism, which is defined as a sense that society is in decline or just a lot of pessimism about the future of your country. So why do we want to do that? Well, in previous reports, like Fear and Not Values, we find that people's anxieties stemming from large-scale social change really feed in and drive political polarization. In another report, Power of the Past, we find that these anxieties also make people more susceptible to the messages of populist parties. These parties employ nostalgic rhetoric to say that, well, we have to deal with the uncertainty today by returning to the past. What we now wanted to do is to kind of juxtapose societal pessimism, so people's pessimism about the future of their country, to the way that people view their own lives, so their own personal optimism or pessimism about their own future. And what we did is a survey of about 12,000 EU citizens, and we have done that within the EU as such, so in the 27 member states, but also in 7 member states more in depth. Belgium, France, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Poland, and Spain. And we tried to answer 3 questions. So how optimistic or pessimistic are people about their own personal future and the future of their country? And how does this differ across member states? Then second, how do personal and societal optimism or pessimism distribute across different social groups? So how do the young versus the old versus men versus women think about their own personal future and about the future of their country? And thirdly, do supporters of populist right-wing parties differ from supporters for other parties in their, you know, views about their own personal future and about society at large? So what we find is actually quite interesting. So respondents are way more optimistic about their own personal lives than they are about their country's future. They're actually quite negative, pessimistic about the outlook of their country. 58% of respondents in the EU as a whole feel optimistic about their own personal future, but only 42% feel equally optimistic about their country's future. So kind of the basic message from our report is what we call an optimism gap. So people are optimistic about their own lives. In general, we find some differences across social groups, but nonetheless quite optimistic, but they're actually quite pessimistic about society at large. So they believe that they will themselves be fine in the future, but their society will not be. So now turning to the question of differences across member states, and here we find some striking differences. France and Italy are the countries where we see the largest number of pessimists. So people are both pessimistic about their own personal future and that of their country. 61% of French respondents express a pessimistic outlook about their own personal lives, and even larger, so 69% of French respondents are also pessimistic about their country's future. We find slightly less personal pessimism in Italy. 56% express to be pessimistic about their own lives, but way more, so 72% are quite pessimistic about their country's future. In Belgium, we see a little bit of a split when it comes to personal expectations about the future. So, you know, 50% is optimistic, 50% is pessimistic. However, Belgians are way more pessimistic than optimistic when it comes to their country's future. In Germany, the Netherlands, Poland, and Spain, we find a clear majority of people that are optimistic about their personal lives, but quite worried about their country's future. And actually the largest optimism gap, so being optimistic about your personal life and pessimistic about society, we find among Spanish and German respondents. So now turning to the second questions about social groups. We find that young people are way more optimistic about their personal lives than older counterparts. But the young and the old don't differ so much when it comes to their expectations about their country's future. They're both pessimistic. We find the largest optimism gap among the highly educated and women. So 62% of the highly educated are quite optimistic about their own future, but only 44% are optimistic about their country's future. Among women, we find that 55% express personal optimism, while only 38% are optimistic about their country's future. And now turning to the last questions about party supporters and specifically about supporters of populist right parties, we find a striking pattern. So those who support far-right populist parties, think like the Alternative for Deutschland in Germany or Lega in Italy or Rassemblée Nationale in France, they are way more likely to be pessimistic both about their own lives and about the country's future. And the only exception to this kind of pessimism of party supporters of right-wing populist parties is that we find in Poland, actually, that the more social liberal party supporters are the most pessimistic of all, much more pessimistic than the populist right party supporters in that country. So this is the picture we're getting from public opinion. Well, Isabel, what does this mean for European politics?
Over the years, there has been quite a lot of interest in people's perception of societal decline and how they feel about the future. Risk society is the notion the sociologists Anthony Giddens and Ulrich Beck coined to describe societies that experience rapid modernization processes and are increasingly preoccupied with their own future safety and development, thereby generating perceptions of increased risk or insecurity. In this context, our tendency as humans to be overly optimistic about our personal future is cast in a new light. When it comes to predicting what will happen to us tomorrow, next week, or years from now, we overestimate the likelihood of positive events and underestimate that of negative events. This is what Telly Sherode has called the optimism bias. In this report, we shed light on a related aspect, namely that people are more optimistic about their personal future than they are about the future of the community or society as a whole. A widespread pattern appears to be that while a majority of people believe that they themselves will be fine, they also believe society is in decline. Sometimes the optimism bias serves us well. It can strengthen our belief in our own capacities to cope with the challenges and insecurities of the future. At the same time, it also leads to a distortion. It makes us overestimate our own resilience to cope with the future relative to that of society as a whole. As such, it may lure us into inaction when action is needed most. There seem to be at least two scenarios in which we can expect the optimism gap to trick us. First, overestimating our personal resilience. Overestimating our resilience in the face of imminent danger might well result in ignoring it instead of fighting it. The corona crisis offers a vivid example. To prevent the virus from spreading, European governments advised to practice social distancing. However, the appeal to people's sense of responsibility largely failed. It did not break through the general soundtrack of busy lives and long to-do lists. Governments had to spell out legally binding rules to stop people in their tracks. In every epidemic that I ever covered, regrets Donald McNeil of the New York Times, whether it was AIDS in Africa or Zika here, people did not believe the disease is going to get them until somebody they knew got it and suffered. Second, underestimating our society's capacity to act. Underestimating society's capacity to act in the face of approaching dangers may paralyze rather than stimulate action. This is particularly true when it comes to existential threats, such as climate change. Their scale and consequences are very hard to grasp, tend to overwhelm and make individual action look pointless. For example, for a long time people have known the threat of rising temperatures and sea levels, but it has not led to widespread change in behavior. It is difficult for people to understand that if everyone modifies their behavior somewhat, society as a whole will likely prove more capable of tackling the issue. As Time magazine editor Jeffrey Kluger puts it, the bad news for environmental scientists and policymakers trying to wake the public up to the perils we face is that climate change checks almost every one of our ignored problem boxes. For starters, it lacks the absolutely critical component, the me component. Climate change is a huge problem, arguably the biggest of all problems, and that makes individual action seem awfully pointless. We reason that we can curtail things we want to do, like driving or flying, but that if other people aren't going to do it, it's not going to make any difference. In the current situation, we observe two types of crisis management by European governments. Some, such as Viktor Orban's government in Hungary, have given in to the authoritarian temptation. Others follow an inform and engage strategy. They count on transparency, creating trust, ultimately motivating citizens to comply. We are a democracy.
We thrive not because we are forced to do something, but because we share knowledge and encourage active participation, underlines Chancellor Merkel. The message is clear, the information is available, and we will keep passing it on to you, states President Macron. From the start, I have chosen to be fully transparent, to share information. I chose not to play down the situation, not to hide the reality, adds Prime Minister Conte. Conte, Macron, Merkel and others conveyed a message that the danger is real and that in order to fight it, everybody must engage and be part of the solution. They moderate people's overconfidence in their own resilience while emphasizing the important role each and every citizen plays in protecting society as a whole. It is interesting to see how several modern political leaders choose to fully engage with their citizens while being transparent about their own thinking and decision-making. They demonstrate trust in their citizens to understand and act accordingly. In return, they see their approval ratings rise. In the political pressure cooker that is the coronavirus outbreak, it is nearly impossible to assess the political, economic and societal impacts. However, straight talk and transparency in the face of ongoing bad news about choices, risk and consequences seems to be the winning strategy when it comes to both effectiveness and public support. There might be general lessons for those working to counter the crisis in trust and credibility that politicians have been facing for many years now. Honest talk about the situation at hand and the choices individuals and societies face do not lead to mistrust and disrespect. In fact, being addressed as adults, people are likely to feel valued and thus grant their trust in return. Should this combination of transparency, straightforward communication and trust in the public prevail, it could prove to be one of the long-term benefits of this crisis.
This was the second eOpinions audio. Thank you so much for listening. For more information about eOpinions and about this report, please visit our website at eopinions.eu. You can also give us a shout out on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at eOpinions. eOpinions is an initiative of the Bertelsmann Stiftung. This podcast would have not been possible without the brilliant work of Sabine Kurpius, Oberon Jones, and our eOpinions team consisting of Sandra Deppe and Hadi Schilchen.